Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey everyone, JJ Cooper, Kyle Glazer here on a Baseball America playoff podcast brought to you by MyBookie. Kyle and I are going to be doing this, you know, some form of this, whether it's just us or maybe it'll be some other guests sometimes. It'll also be days where, you know, that it'll be maybe not even either of us, and we'll have someone else doing it. But we're going to try to do playoff podcasts as we do every October. I know it's September still, but every October. And with that, we're going to analyze what happened yesterday on day one of the wild card round of the American League and get it in and out of the year before we get to the cavalcade, the onslaught, the torrent of baseball that we're going to have today, eight games today here on Wednesday, September 30th. Kyle, good to be able to, you know, you're up early to do this, West Coast doing this. I do want to ask you kind of the first thing I want to kind of throw to you is, of these four games we had yesterday, what is the team that you think that lost game one, that is sitting there knowing they have to win two games in a row to preserve their season? What's the team that you say, you know what, I still feel pretty good about their chances to do so?
Yeah, so everything's relative, right? When you're only one game away from your season ending potentially, you never feel super comfortable or super great. I think just in that context, the one team that lost yesterday that I think you still feel somewhat okay about, given the context, is probably the Twins. I mean, this was a team that, you know, was in the lead for a good chunk of the game. It was a 1-1 game in the ninth, and a mistake happened. A throwing error, the door opened up. It's not like the Twins got dominated. It's not like they just looked outmatched or outclassed. They've got Jose Berrios throwing against Jose Urquidy, and Urquidy obviously has been really, really good for the Astros when healthy. Last postseason, he was excellent. He was really good after becoming active this year. But Jose Berrios, in a lot of ways, is the Twins' ace. You're at home. Again, they were the most competitive of the losing teams yesterday, I felt like. So of all the teams that lost yesterday, that's the one where I think you feel the best. But at the same time, you can never feel particularly great when your season, again, is one day away from being over.
And the flip side of that is what is the team? So you're still like the chances of the Twins having a chance. What's the team that's up 1-0? Not Astros, because you've already covered that one. But is there another team that you look at that's up 1-0 and you say, okay, that was a great, you know, hey, being up 1-0 puts you in a much better position than being down 0-1. But is the team that you're still a little worried about whether they're going to be able to pull this off?
Not really. I mean, that first game is so, so, so critical to winning this. You know, and for the most part, we saw – you know, that the Rays are very favored over the Blue Jays. And, you know, they came up with some big hits. Blake Snell gave them a great pitching performance. Again, I'm not really worried about the White Sox. Again, this is an offense we know can bang. They slumped a little bit, but they came out yesterday. You know, Yankees, Indians, that you're not worried because Masahiro Tanaka is on the mound. Now, Carlos Carrasco is a really, really, really good pitcher as well. But Tanaka has been locked down in the playoffs. This feels like a cop-out, but I don't really have an answer of what team lost yesterday. Do you go, okay, well, you know, I mean, I think all three teams that we, you know, hadn't talked about beyond Astros Twins, you got to feel pretty good about their chances right now.
It was a day with some dominating pitching performances on day one. It was a day where I think the absolutely positively best pitcher in baseball in 2020, Shane Bieber, was the worst starting pitcher on the mound. The craziness of baseball, if you'd have said, hey, there's going to be one guy who just gets utterly shelled, and I'm not looking at you, Matt Shoemaker. You know, you're not the starter who's going to get shelled. You're going to do really well. But Shane Bieber, you know, no, you need to back up a little bit. You know, you're gonna have your worst outing of the year, and it's not going to be close. Kind of a crazy day. You know, we do want to kind of go through each game, a little bit of each game, and we'll kind of go chronological on this. As you said, Twins-Astros was probably, in my opinion, the most interesting game of the day. I mean, it was back and forth. It was a pitcher's duel. It was a game that really Minnesota could have blown open in the first, but Miguel Sano is thrown out on an infield grounder. Nice play by Bregman that he's thrown out by about an eighth of a step, a quarter of a step, something like that. You know, we're ump made the right call, but that was enough for Houston. And then, as you said, you get to the ninth inning, and the flip side of that, Alex Bregman made a very tough play coming in on the ball, something he did a couple of times in that game. And then you go to the ninth, and Polanco is not able to make, not an easy, but a very makeable play, an error that essentially is the game. I don't know another way to put it. That's the game. That, you know, it was very much back and forth. But one of the things that we have a Slack channel that we enjoy discussing the games as it's going on. And one of the interesting decisions in this game was that the Astros pulled Zach Greinke, essentially said two times through the order, that's it for you, and turned to Framber Valdez. And I would say overall, when you look at the playoffs, and if I'm mischaracterizing you in any way, please tell me, you know, feel free. But you do not like the idea of turning over these games to your bullpen so early, especially what it means to the long-term effects of your bullpen over the postseason, over the series, all that. You were not a fan of that when it happened, but looking at it now, seeing that they kind of did basically minor league Astros, you know, plan A, which is we're actually going to, you know, tag team this. Does it now, it obviously worked out for them, but looking at it now, are you still not a fan of what they did with pulling Greinke so early, or the fact that they went to Framber Valdez for effectively the second half of the game makes sense to you?
Well, I think Framber Valdez simply went in and pitched his tail off, and you give the guy credit. You know, at the end of the day, we can talk strategy as much as we want. It comes down to players and how they perform and how they step up. And in this case, Framber Valdez, tip your cap. I mean, the guy was great all year. He'd had some long relief outings like this. I covered a game in Anaheim where it was a very similar deal. He had a long relief outing and even took it into extra innings, if I recall correctly. So again, performance is always going to be the dictator here. Generally speaking, given it's your number one starter, he's at 79 pitches, it's been a lot of soft contact, knowing that you're in a situation where you potentially are going to have to play, you know, three straight games and it's a long postseason, your bullpen, you know, if you wear it out too early, can get really, really tired. Again, I didn't love it just given who was on the mound, how he was performing. And I look at, you know, the other games yesterday and you see, hey, the White Sox, you know, Lucas Giolito was pitching great, obviously. White Sox let him go. You know, the Yankees got a big lead. They let Garrett Cole still go out and eat seven innings. Blake Snell, the Rays let him go until, you know, there was a little bit of traffic on the bases. The go-ahead run came to the plate. I kind of prefer that when it's your number one starter. And the Astros as well have had some – they have a very inexperienced young bullpen. So, you know, personally, yeah, I would have liked to have seen them leave Greinke in for another inning or two. But again, it comes down to the players and what they do and how they perform. And Framber Valdez pitched his tail off, and you just give him the utmost credit in the world.
The other thing I'll say with that, I liked the move at the time. And the reason I liked it more than anything is that I see the Twins as a team. Now, they've used their ability to do this, but I see the Twins as a team that absolutely positively wants to face right-handers. You know, they do not like facing lefties. They like facing right-handers. This year, they slugged over 100 points better. They were 772 OPS against righties. They were 658 against lefties. Now, I think the Astros are approaching this. It sure feels like, I wouldn't be surprised today if they tandem started this again. You know, I think that they're looking at this as, now the way teams do this, they game plan this. They're basically going, okay, how do we get 27 outs? And they kind of go into everything falls apart the moment you actually start playing the game. But they go in with a game plan of, okay, if we can get 12, 15 outs here, we can get 12 outs here, we can get to that. They kind of plan that out. If I'm a Twins fan, and I don't know how you can be optimistic during the playoffs if you're a Twins fan, because you have a history here that unless you're flashing back to 87, 91, and you've basically taken off being, you know, following the Twins since then, you have a lot of reasons to be pessimistic come postseason. But if there is a slight reason for optimism, it is that, okay, at some point in this series, Framber Valdez was likely to get a lot of outs against you because you are very ineffective, you know, against lefties. And okay, that's been done now. And after this, they do have a couple of lefties in the pen, which is something the Astros in past years have not had. But you're probably going to, you know, get a chance to face you know, more righties going forward. And I think that that's kind of key for the Twins.
Yeah, and one thing I want to give the Astros credit here too is they had some really good at-bats where you saw the postseason experience come out a little bit. You know, I think about the seventh inning, you know, they're down 1-0, two outs, none on. Excuse me, two outs, none on. And they're able to string some things together. Josh Reddick single, Martin Maldonado single, George Springer single. I mean, again, composed late game at-bats. They were able to make it happen. And, you know, the error obviously opened the door for everything in the ninth inning. I mean, that was really the catalyst there. You know, that right there is the third out of the inning. Jose Altuve, you know, draws a bases loaded walk, you know, works the count full. Michael Brantley comes back with a sharp single, you know, really professional hitter on a 1-2 count. I mean, I think we saw, again, just some really professional at-bats from the Astros there. And, again, give them credit. You know, we can talk about strategy all we want. It comes down to players performing in crunch time, staying composed, staying within themselves, and, you know, making big plays, whether that's at the plate, on the mound, in the field. And the Astros in crunch time had a lot of guys do that yesterday.
It is interesting, though, as we kind of wrap up on this game, the Astros, which you talked about the importance of game one. Well, I would say the Astros threw their best two pitchers. You know, Greinke, because of his history, I think can fairly be called their ace. You could also argue that Framber Valdez may have been even better this year. Those were their best two pitchers, you know, starting pitchers as far as FIP this year, as far as ratios, you know, just general effectiveness. Christian Javier, Urquidy are not far off on that. Although, as you said, Urquidy was banged up, not banged up. Urquidy was held out early on coronavirus, but now it's going to be interesting to see where this goes going on. We're going to jump now to White Sox A's. Before we do that, though, we're going to stop for a short message.
It's fall, and at MyBookie, that can mean only one thing. It's winning season. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more. At MyBookie, winning season is all about your chance to win big. You can bet the NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball, USC, NFL, and then some. The craziest sports fall of your lifetime is here. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, collect your cash. Invest in your intuition. Select from hundreds of future bets where you can bet games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Put that big brain of yours to good use. Use promo code BASEBALLAMERICA and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Thousands of cross sports wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now to bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today, only at MyBookie.
Welcome back. And White Sox A's, power and power, I guess would be the way I'd say this. Lucas Giolito continued to mark himself as one of the most improved players in baseball. He has taken that leap that the White Sox really needed someone to take in their pitching staff. He's done it. And, you know, coming off of a year where he had a no-hitter, we had reasons to wonder if he was going to get a chance to do that again. You know, that he took a perfect game, actually, relatively deep into this one. I kind of felt like that the White Sox were in control of this one pretty much from early on because the way Giolito pitched, but also Jose Abreu, who's having just a monster season. You know, the power of this White Sox team is kind of their calling card, and it lived up to that in game one, Kyle.
Yeah, absolutely. Four runs scored, three home runs, one of which is a two-run shot. You know, everything scored on home runs. But, you know, Lucas Giolito, I mean, that was just awesome to watch. I mean, you talk about a guy who's just, you know, going right at hitters. Everything's working. I mean, the breaking stuff was nasty. The power stuff was nasty, all of it. And he was dotting the corners. I mean, this is just a great pitching performance. And that's what the postseason is about, watching the best perform at their best. And it's just really, really impressive and continuously incredible to see how Lucas Giolito, you know, reinvented himself, shortened his arm action to become the pitcher he's become. There's such a long history of young pitchers struggling for their first 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and then something changes and they just become a whole different pitcher. And it's as Carlos Collazo, our colleague, tweeted out yesterday, your reminder to never give up on your pitching prospects too early. These guys take a little longer, but when they click, they really click. And I just have an appreciation for talent, and watching Lucas Giolito pitch the way he did yesterday, you can't help but just tip your cap and enjoy it. I mean, this was a really special performance. That was a lot of fun to watch.
It was. And if I'm the A's, I you know, the good news is I won't have to face Lucas Giolito again in this series. The bad news is that I do think that this White Sox lineup is ferocious. And as we've said kind of throughout this, I mean, we said this in our preview podcast, you know, that when you just look at the lineups, you give credit to Oakland for being as good as they've, you know, as they are to get here. But I just feel like that their lineup does not scare me the way that the White Sox lineup does.
No, it doesn't. If, you know, I mentioned on the preview podcast, I could kind of imagine a scenario where both teams win this in a couple of different ways. And for the A's, the scenario for them to win this is, you know, their starting pitching, as flawed as it is, can give them, you know, four and two thirds, five solid innings. And then you bring out that bullpen and you keep the game close, 1-0, 2-0. But what we saw the White Sox do yesterday, where they went out and just jumped on Jesus Luzardo. And you have to note, the White Sox came into this year 14-0 against left-handed pitchers. That's now 15-0. Luzardo's very talented. He's also a young lefty, a rookie season lefty, facing a ferocious offense that just pounds left-handers. You know, you just kind of feel bad for the kid. And the White Sox, you know, pounced on them. And if they do that, you know, the A's, they've had some great comebacks, including a couple walk-off grand slams early in the year. But the White Sox, you can't give them that much room that early. And, you know, we talk about Lucas Giolito, and he's obviously, you know, been a great pitcher this year. Dallas Keuchel's been their best starter this year. He had a sub-2 ERA, 1.99. I mean, when you talk about, you know, the best pitchers the White Sox have, Keuchel's been the guy that's actually been more consistently effective. Now he goes game two. Chris Bassitt has been the A's best pitcher this year as a starter. But yeah, I mean, you look at what Keuchel's done. You look at that Twins offense. Again, the A's are a really good team. They've had a lot of comebacks. You don't ever want to count them out. But I think when you just look at how each team is positioned in game two, the White Sox absolutely are sitting very, very pretty right now.
You know, again, we're going to move through some of these pretty quick, because again, in that game, there wasn't, there were not many inflection points. Giolito good. you could say some of that for Jay's Rays as well. Blake Snell good. And, you know, that game was a little closer, but the reality of it is that when we talk about teams have a plan, Blake Snell was outstanding. I think actually in some ways Alejandro Kirk getting that that really nice at bat where he goes, you know, oppo to get a single, which breaks up the no hitter, kind of almost, you know, may have done the Rays a favor, because then you're not debating do you need to pull a guy from a no hitter, because Blake Snell has not gone deep in games. They are not treating him as a guy that they want to get. They do not want to see him walk off the mound at the end of the seventh or eighth inning and then hand the ball over to the pen. They want to get a really good 5 to 6 innings out of him. They pulled him after 5 2/3, but he walked off the mound in a situation where, you know, he had done his job. And you know, you look at it. I also have to say the unusual strategy that the Jays had by starting Matt Shoemaker in the opener, which not their ace. not a guy who would have expected to see, you know, maybe even start in this series. It didn't, it did not come back to hurt them, except for the fact that Robbie Ray ran into a little bit of trouble after he left the game. But Shoemaker, excellent for three innings. This was a game, you know, that you had some kind of unlikely guys for the Rays kind of step up. Man, you know, Manuel Margot with the homer. There was some nice defensive positioning and defensive plays by Willy Adames. Peter Fairbanks, the guy that they acquired last year in the Nick Solak deal, gets a save after not having a save all season, although he was a very good reliever for them. Anything from that game that really struck out to you, Kyle, is like something that was notable or something that we should watch going forward?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the Jays have played the Rays tough all year, and they did. The Rays, you know, had to fight. This was a close game, 3-1. I think two things that jump out, you know, the Rays, we've talked about, their pro scouting staff has done a really, really good job for years finding guys who are, you know, are a little under the radar and helping, you know, these guys become, you know, impact players. I mean, Randy Arozarena and Manuel Margot are two offseason trade acquisitions who, you know, great athletes and defenders who had some questions about their offensive ability. You know, Arozarena because he was just so aggressive, and Margot just because he hadn't demonstrated a whole lot of impact. And these are the two guys that come up with the biggest hits of the game for the Rays. That did jump out to me. You know, with Rays, the other thing I thought was, I thought they managed Snell beautifully here. They let him go, you know, 5 2/3. And I liked that they didn't pull him as soon as the no-hitter was over. They didn't pull him as soon as Alejandro Kirk had that single. They looked at the lineup and said, okay, we're still at the bottom. They let him pitch to Danny Jansen. They let him go get Kevin Biggio. And then they pulled him because you're at the top of the lineup and you're about to go through a right-handed run with, you know, Bo Bichette. I should say Biggio is technically the leadoff hitter, but you're about to go through this right-handed run with Bichette, Grichuk, Guerrero, Gurriel, Teoscar Hernandez. So I just thought, you know, we talk about managers and when they're pulling pitchers, and we shouldn't be surprised that Kevin Cash and the Rays just had a really good game plan of exactly when to do that and how to do that. And the Rays bullpen held it down. You know, Peter Fairbanks was great. Nick Anderson, another under-the-radar trade acquisition last year, was great. Again, just a really solid game for the Rays. And again, this is how they're going to win. Great pitching, a couple of timely hits. This is not a juggernaut of an offense. But this is the formula that's worked for them consistently, and this is what it's going to look like.
Nice play also in left field. Some point in the game, I'll be honest, I was trying to watch multiple games, but I remember Rosarena making a nice catch on a ball I thought was, could have been at least a single, if not a double. And again, there was some good defense for Tampa as well. But overall, you know, I do watch this Blue Jays team, and I do feel like I'm watching a team and going, man, they're here, you know, they're in the playoffs now, but they're a team that I just wonder, they could be really interesting over the next few years. You look at the middle of that lineup and you go, oh, this could really be something.
Yeah, I wrote about that in our preseason preview. I mean, pretty much the entire, you know, main infield, obviously Jonathan Villar isn't, but you know, a lot of them they're all 26 and younger, and even, you know, the outfield, Grichuk and Hernandez and Gurriel, these guys are all 27, 28. There's a large potential window here for these guys to be in their primes. And I will say with the Blue Jays, I was curious about the Matt Shoemaker decision. Hyunjin Ryu, you know, he's been pretty good when he's gotten that extra day of rest. You know, I will say if you're the Jays, you feel good about going Hyunjin Ryu in game two and Taijuan Walker in game three. Both of them have been really, really good for them this year. Again, am I going to pick them to beat the Rays? No, but again, I think if you're the Blue Jays, you feel pretty good going with these two guys, game two, game three.
So that takes us to our nightcap, which kind of got the way that the schedule worked out. We had three games going at one point, and then boom, they all clear out. And we've got, you know, Cleveland and New York. And the reality of it is that probably, you know, the least compelling game of the day, just because New York did a very good job of beating up on the best pitcher in baseball. It was an Aaron Judge homer early. And then you got to the point, third, fourth, fifth, where Shane Bieber, it wasn't that he was awful, but he was not able to execute the way that he has been pretty much all season. His breaking balls didn't seem to be as convincing. He wasn't getting the swings and misses that he often gets. A lot of really good takes by New York. And And when New York got a fastball, you know, also his command seemed to at times, not always, he had good command a lot of the time, but at times was not what it normally is, which meant that his fastball caught a little bit more of the plate than it normally does. And credit to New York, they beat up on him, and then they beat up on the bullpen after he left. But at that point, it was really kind of, here we go. We're at that point, it was, okay, on to game two on both sides, I would say, you know, in many ways, Kyle.
Yeah, I think what stood out to me is, so we talked about this on the pre-playoff podcast yesterday, that the Yankees offense at home versus on the road was really two different offenses. And, you know, I talked about, you know, intuitively an offense with Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and Luke Voit and DJ LeMahieu and Gleyber Torres. Like, these guys are really freaking good players. They should be able to bang anywhere. And you kind of expect them to, but for whatever reason, the Yankees offense as a unit was just not good on the road this year. Well, we saw that talent come out yesterday. I mean, right away, four pitches in, LeMahieu single, Aaron Judge home run, the Yankees are off to the races. And this is what they're capable of. This is the talent they have. As we mentioned, it just hadn't clicked on the road for them. For them to go out and be at their best against Shane Bieber in Cleveland, just really, really impressive. And again, I think we can point to, you know, Bieber didn't do this, didn't do that. I think the Yankees just had great at-bats, and these were really talented players putting a charge into the baseball. Seeing this kind of come to fruition, it gives you hope. If the Yankees can do this, yeah, I mean, this is a World Series team. They have the horses. They just, between injuries, and they also played a lot of really bad defense this year, and there were just some depth issues. But here they are, you know, for all their low points this year, they were 500 or better the whole year. They were in playoff position the whole year. Now that they're healthy, everything's kind of starting to click. And the other thing I took away from this as well was, you know, this was the reason they signed Gerrit Cole. As soon as they got a lead, he smelled blood. He was not going to let them give this up. I mean, the Yankees are up 3-0, gives up a run. They come back, give up another run. But, you know, again, this was a guy that, okay, if you hand him a 3-0 lead, the game's over. And he went out and he shoved, gave them 7 innings. They didn't have to waste the bullpen in a game where, you know, all of a sudden if he ran into trouble when it was a 5-2 lead, you have to go to your bullpen early. That's just messy for everyone. He shut it down. He did a great job.
He was great. I think
he's just, on the whole, everything went as perfectly as they could have for the Yankees, except for Josh Naylor, you know, hitting baseballs hard.
And making a nice defensive play, too.
Yeah, no, that was an impressive playoff debut by him. But, yes, everything that could have gone right for the Yankees did, and that's a testament to them. They made that happen.
Well, the other thing I would say is that, and this is why you have Gerrit Cole. They went up against Shane Bieber in a game where they could go, you know what? If our guy's on, he's every bit as good as the guy who will likely be the unanimous Cy Young winner. That's significant. I mean, that's to have that. And Gerrit Cole has done this before, but he was in complete control. And I know that my velocity bias is a bias that I wear proudly. I want my ace. And maybe it's because I covered the Braves in the 90s. Those were some great pitching staffs. But if you give me a choice between the guy who basically has that kind of that fastball that just can blow it by guys to go with, you know, secondaries, or as I saw in the 90s with the Braves, you know, the Tom Glavins, the Greg Maddoxes, who are really good, but who often didn't have those utterly dominating outings, you know, in the postseason, because every at-bat's a tougher one if you're having to nibble a little bit, especially in Glavin's case sometimes. That's, to me, that was what Gerrit Cole was last night. Gerrit Cole last night was, I'm just going to be in complete control of this game. And especially once he got that lead, it was like, against this lineup, no, they're not. They have no chance of coming back against me. And that's what the Yankees needed to see, and that's what they did see. The other thing, though, that I just wanted – I'm going to go on a little bit of a thought here, and then, you know, I want to hear your thoughts too, but I'm afraid of today as a baseball fan. I know it's great to have 8 playoff games, but I just have to tell you that yesterday I didn't enjoy that during the day as much as I wanted to, because I just felt like there was too much important baseball going on for me to fully process everything that was happening. When we had the Twins-Astros game grabbing my full attention in the ninth inning, understandably, even if I had a second screen on that had White Sox A's on it, and I had a third screen on that had Rays Blue Jays, but I was locked in on what was happening in the, you know, in the Twins Astros game, because that game was basically was on the line in the ninth inning. I would have really, really preferred. I understand the nature of this, that we're going to have games going as other games go on, but it ended up being, because that A's White Sox game went quick and the Twins Astros game ran a little slower, those games were running in parallel. And so I felt like just at the time that I got to shift my full attention to White Sox A's, thinking, you know what, I'll get to Rays Blue Jays once this is over. Well, that game ended basically right at the same time. I didn't feel like it's the playoffs. I want to fully appreciate everything that's going on. And I wasn't able to do that yesterday. Today, I fear for, you know, for how is it possible to actually pay attention. Now, great thing is again, hey, we live in a much better world for this now than we did when I was growing up as a kid, where it would be, I've got this one game on one channel. We're not getting the, you know, these other games, you know, at all on my three channels or whatever. And by the way, I don't have this thing called the internet where I can go back and watch condensed games, or I can go back and watch the highlights or all those things. But that said, as a baseball fan, this isn't March Madness where I don't care really that much about that 12-5 game. All I want to know is if it's going to come down to the wire, and if it does, flip me over there just before I get to see the buzzer beater. That's not baseball. In baseball, I need to know, especially like the A's White Sox game, if you weren't paying close attention to that, you would every now and then, I would notice that Lucas Giolito was shoving, but you turn and focus on another game for a minute, and then Abreu hits a homer, that's over. You know, I missed that moment. It's not something where you say, oh, okay, there's two men on, this is a key at bat, let me shift my focus to this game. It was snap your fingers, the moment's happened, now we're moving on. I struggled with it yesterday. It was not as enjoyable as I hoped it would be, having four playoff games on the same day. I fear for today. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, no, it was definitely tough just because I'm watching, you know, Astros Twins. It's a 1-1 game. It's like, oh, Lucas Giolito's throwing a perfect game. I need to flip over to that. It's very, very tough to try and watch three baseball games at once and really get the full grasp of everything that's happening, all the little moments that end up making a big difference. And then when you do try and dial into one game, you feel like you're missing what's going on in the other games. There's a little bit of FOMO. I mean, I barely really got to watch Rays Blue Jays yesterday just because, you know, Twins Astros and White Sox A's both were so compelling and for different reasons. And by the time I actually got over to Rays Blue Jays, it was the seventh inning. I saw, you know, just in time for Nick Anderson to pitch, Diego Castillo, I'm sorry. So yeah, I mean, you're inevitably going to miss something, and then you wonder, well, did I really get the full breadth of the other games I was watching? It's tough. I personally, yeah, I do prefer being able to dial in on a game, but you know, the situation is what it is. And, you know, I've been thinking about this today. I'll be out. I'm in San Diego. I'll be covering the Cardinals-Padres game one today. And I'm going to be obviously there covering that game, and my focus will be on that. I'm going to essentially miss out probably on what happens in at least four or five other games between pregame and all the interviews and the game itself and postgame. And
absolutely.
Writing. And it's like, I'm going to get home after the game and be like, okay, so what happened? And it's a weird feeling to have.
It is. And again, and these are, I know that I have, you know, first world problems here with this, because we're people who I can legitimately watch, have five screens set up and go, this is my job. Even if you're, you know, we're working in the office, right? If you're back in the office or whatever your job is, you can't do that during the day. And by the way, do remember, like yesterday, we had one primetime game. We had three games that were basically non-prime time on the East Coast, and on the West Coast, they were like, you know, start in the morning to wrapping up basically before you get to dinner. We're going to have that again today. If there's eight games on a day, it's unavoidable. There is no easy answer to this, but I do worry for all we talk about, oh, this great, we have so much baseball. There's, I love during the regular season, I absolutely love the fact that, you know, on a Sunday afternoon where you're just bouncing from game to game because it's Sunday, it's during the middle of the season. There's not any one of these games that's like, this is, you know, a season on the line. We're going to have four elimination games today going on, every one of which is the most important game of those team seasons, to go with four other games. My head may explode. And again, I as problems go, this is not a bad one to have, but I do wish, I wonder if others feel like I do, that if you're, this is actually, I think, way better for a casual fan than it is for a diehard. I also get it, you know, we're also in a weird situation that we're trying to follow all of them. If I'm a Reds fan or a Braves fan or a Yankees fan, take your pick of your team. You just lock in on your game and say, I'm not even worried about anything else. But if you're trying to follow what's going on with all of it, that's where I just have this little worry that it's like, okay, today may be too much. And to be honest, if there are some teams eliminated today and it means that tomorrow we don't have eight games, that's not at all a bad thing to me.
Yeah, it's hard to multitask, but I also enjoy, you know, good quality postseason baseball. And I, you know, being out here on the West Coast, I actually do find it kind of fun. I've got a playoff game at 9 a.m., a playoff game at 10 a.m., a playoff game at 11 a.m. at noon. I've got a playoff game starting every hour on the hour, you know, starting at breakfast time. I do enjoy that. It actually is kind of fun.
So we will dive in. We're going to want to get this up before the first game starts. We did see I think Braves fans, maybe we worried about their rotation, but they are, if I go by Braves Twitter, the fact that Christian Pache is on the postseason roster and Ender Inciarte is not is a fact for much rejoicing in Braves land. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in these games. That's our first game, Reds-Braves, starting at noon today. And we're trying to get this up in advance of that. So we're going to finish this now. For Kyle, I'm JJ here on the Baseball America Playoff Podcast, brought to you by MyBookie. So long, everybody.